is crackling, everybody. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire. That is right here on numberfire.com. And of course, the Number Fire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look ahead to the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am from a daily fantasy golf perspective and letting you know which golfers we are keying in on for this week. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gadula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, we are heading out to Pebble Beach, always a fun event because it is a rather unique format. So how are you doing today?
I don't find this event particularly fun, but it's okay because Ricky won finally. Yep. At Phoenix, Sergio went berserk over in Saudi Arabia. Hosung Choi's in the field, so we'll get some good viral content there. So, I mean, even though this format's kind of maddening with the three courses and the amateurs slowing everything down, it's, I've said it a lot of times before, but good time to be a golf fan.
Hosung Choi is just a man of the people because I know I could never duplicate what he does, but the fact that he has this little like pirouette, I guess is a way to describe it, at the end of his swing allows me to say I'm just trying to emulate him when I mess up my golf shot. So I think that there is like, I want to root for him because of that. Is that like rational of me?
Yeah. You root for any golfer who's fun.
Yes, I think that it's okay to have fun watching sports, as like has been the constant discussion with the NFL this week. Like, it's okay if you didn't enjoy watching a defensive scrum. High scoring football is fun, and that is okay. You can admit that. It doesn't make you less of a person or less of a fan. It's also fun, okay, to have fun watching golf. So just embrace it. Have fun.
Not a big fan of the Super Bowl, then, I take it.
For multiple reasons. As you know, the Jared Goff truther in me was brutalized, left bloody on the sidewalk. And I grew up a Jets fan, unfortunately, which was stupid because I was an idiot child. So on multiple levels, Brandon, it was not great, Bob. That is the way I would phrase that.
Yeah, I mean, the punting was very good. The defensive line play was like fine to watch for a few quarters, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Nope, I'm okay without that. Brandon Cooks dropped a couple of passes. He's my boy too, so you know, I'm happy to have the Pebble Beach Pro-Am here to distract me. We got NASCAR next week in Daytona. I mean, technically this week too with the Clash, but you know, we're moving on. I'm good with that. Very, very okay with that. Speaking of NASCAR, next week we will resume our NASCAR podcasts every Wednesday, breaking down strategies and some players to monitor for each race. That comes out every Wednesday. You can get that and this PGA podcast by subscribing to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. That is on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed and baseball just around the corner as well. Let's take a look here at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. It is an event that takes place at three separate courses. The main one, of course, is Pebble Beach Golf Links. It is 6,816 yards in a par 72. Monterey Peninsula CC is 6,958 yards, a par 71. And Spyglass Hill Golf Club is 6,953 yards and a par 72. So all of them beneath 7,000 yards, but driving distance, at least based on my process, does matter still. Each golfer will be on each of those courses once within the first three rounds, and then there will be a cut after the third round, followed by a second round at Pebble Beach on Sunday to close things out. There has been a lot of movement in this field, so I'm assuming FanDuel will be adding players to the field sometime later Tuesday, as they've done the past couple of weeks. There are golfers who are in the player pool who are not there this weekend, so make sure you check out player indicators for them. Roughly 156 golfers will wind up being in the field when all is said and done. So, Brandon, unique format for this week. What are some stats you're focusing on for the Pebble Beach Pro-Am?
Yeah, unique format for sure. We get the 54-hole cut, the amateurs playing to slow everything down. But the biggest problem for me is that there's no strokes gain data on two of the three courses in the rotation this week. That's Monterey and Spyglass, so no strokes gain data there. Pebble Beach, of course, has it, but that limits our ability to dig back into past events with a lot of confidence, but we can still extrapolate a bit. The first thing that we can say with some confidence is that strokes gained approach matters. It's the big dog yet again this week. According to Data Golf, strokes gained off the tee is a little less important here than on most courses on tour, while strokes gained around the green actually popped last year. So that still leaves us, though, with strokes gained approach as a key stat. We can also sort of deduce the importance of approach play because past five winners here, all top 15 in greens and regulation gained. Ted Potter last year was 15th. Jordan Spieth before that, 4th. Vaughn Taylor was 2nd. Snedeker was 6th. Jimmy Walker was 12th. Also, digging into par 4 and par 5 scoring, par 4 and par 5 scoring can always be like iffy to sort of hone in on, because if you score well on those, you're going to sort of correlate well with in-tournament success. But given the fact that four of the past five winners were all top two and birdies gained, Walker was 10th, I think that we have to target golfers who can convert on these scoring chances whenever they get to these small greens in regulation. You know, sort of along those lines, if you don't want to target volatile putting stats, I think we can still look to proximity. That stands out. Again, limited data here, but Ted Potter was 4th in proximity gained last year. Spieth was 26th. Vaughn Taylor was 5th. So proximity makes my cut this week. And then back to strokes gained around the green, not a stat that I usually sort of look at, but it accounted for 22% of the scoring distribution here last year, according to Data Golf. Around the green play sort of matters here. You have to be able to scramble at these courses because the greens are small. So, you know, don't go overboard with around the green play because it is such a small percentage of your shots. But it's on my list this week for once.
Yeah, and I think that that does make sense. I have scrambling, which is semi-related to around the green play at least, but that is one of my three big stats along with strokes gained approach, and distance is in there for me because, so Ted Potter Jr. won last year, and he is not long off the tee. He was 179th in the tour last year in driving distance, but overall, if you look at the top 20 golfers last year, their median ranking in distance was 58th. And their median ranking in accuracy was 91st. Like, you did have Potter, you did have Ches Reavie up there. Neither of those guys are super long. Kevin Streelman finished well, but you also had guys who are pretty long off the tee who did well and may not necessarily be the most accurate golfer. So I don't think that distance is necessarily a must to do well, as Potter and Reavie showed last year, as Brant Snedeker showed in 2017. So it's not a must. But it does seem as if it is better to have distance than to have accuracy, even though the course is not the longest one we'll see this year. Brandon, are you looking at all at any of this, the off-the-tee data? I know you mentioned it matters less here, but any off-the-tee data really factoring in for you big this week?
No, it's kind of not really. If anything, I mean, if you look at the past results, the past info, you know, these fairways are very, very easy to hit. According to Future Fantasy, almost 70% of the fairways have been hit here since 2010. That is really, really high. Now, the one thing we have to keep in mind is that this is the host course. Pebble Beach is the host course for this year's U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. We saw that in 2010, but in 2010, renovations weren't made until after this event. They're starting to sort of creep in a little bit. And the sort of the news is that some of these fairways are narrower, some of the rough is longer, but if anything, I still don't particularly see elevating driving distance into my key stats this week, but I don't think I'll go as far to weigh in driving accuracy either, even strokes gained off the tee. So I think I'm kind of off the, off the tee play this week.
Which means we'll have different processes for this week, which is a rarity, and it's exciting. So prepare to have your butt whooped, Brandon. I am excited for that. If you decide you want to put your PGA knowledge to the test, check out this week's Eagle Contest on FanDuel. It is $7.77 to enter. First place gets $20,000. It is $100,000 in total prizes, with 20.34% of the field getting paid. The top seven spots all net more than $1,000 to enter. Go to FanDuel.com, check out the PGA lobby. That is FanDuel.com to flash all of your PGA skills. Let's take a look at golfers who have done well in this event in the past. And Brandon, one guy who is interesting because a couple weeks ago, some of the things that had been going poorly for Jordan Spieth started to come around. And he may be an interesting guy to discuss here from also a current form perspective, but also the course history matters here for Spieth. He is a past winner here. What have you seen with Spieth both recently and in his course history?
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking to de-emphasize off the tee play, which again, I am, Jim, maybe not, we can look to Jordan Spieth. He won here in 2017. He's played here 6 straight years. He's finished top 22 in each year. That definitely works whenever we're building high-floor FanDuel lineups. According to FantasyNational.com, Spieth leads the entire field in strokes gained at Pebble Beach since 2010. Of course, we need to take that with a grain of salt because we don't have strokes gained data on 2 of these 3 courses. But you know, the bigger issue with when we look at Jordan Spieth, of course, is that really current form. Things have not been the same for Spieth over the past calendar year or so. He's played just twice in 2019. He missed the cut at the Sony Open. He finished 35th at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines, which is a very lengthy course that doesn't particularly fit his game. I'm not the first person to point that out this week, but it is something to note. But again, to me, he's not going to need the driver this week. We've seen him excel here for 6 straight years, one in 2017 again. Now, his approach play has been plus over the past few events. The putter been pretty neutral, and I can live with that.
Neutral is so a positive for him at this point.
Yeah. I think this could be a Spieth week at just 10,800 on FanDuel. Will you be going there, Jim? Doesn't sound like it, but I'm interested in hearing your thoughts.
No, I think I would. Were you thinking I wouldn't because of his off-the-tee play?
Yes.
No, I think that that's actually fine for me. Like, because other guys in his salary tier also aren't, like, glimmering stars necessarily. Like, Matt Kuchar is 600 more, and distance is very much not a Kuch thing. So, like, Spieth's fine there. He's also just really cheap at $10,800. The problem that I have is that I think the volatility with Jordan Spieth is going to be very high here, so I can't make him part of my core. So I think with Spieth, he's one of the golfers where I may just wind up being in line with the field. Like, I could see him potentially being kind of popular this week because of the history he has here, because of the salary being as low as it is. So I could see him being popular. And I think I'm okay being in line with the field, not going aggressively underweight or overweight, and kind of just sticking with the field there and seeing what happens. I know you're not generally in favor of that. I'm very much more okay with that than you are. So where do you see Jordan Spieth?
I like Spieth from a sort of an instinct feel. He's not the best you know, statistical play. I generally look first and, you know, very much primarily at the recent stats and don't really factor in course history, you know, course fit from a, you know, a past history standpoint. I try to sort of look at how golfers are doing, what they're sort of excelling at, what they're struggling with, and fit that to the course. So for Spieth, I think that this could be a Spieth week despite not, you know, the best recent form and everything I'm looking at, but it's going to depend because he kind of, with his price being where it is, he's like the last sort of quote unquote stud,
right?
Before a pretty big drop off. So, you know, if you're left with, you know, $11,000 and you know, you're not sold on Patrick Cantlay, you don't want to play Brant Snedeker, who also has a great course form here. You might just go to Spieth, and that could lead him to be highly owned. And frankly, this is a week where a lot of golfers are, I view a lot of golfers as very much in play among the top, probably everyone Spieth and above I would consider playing.
Sure.
So I'm just probably going to let ownership dictate my decisions come Thursday. I know that's not super helpful right now, but I do think that that might be the way that I play it because I'm having a hard time differentiating between all these top tier golfers.
Yeah, I think that that's something to keep an eye on for sure this week because, like Brandon said, that you have a lot of good options, and that makes it easier for you to pivot if you get a read that someone will definitively be very popular. So definitely a week where ownership will be important. So make sure you're monitoring, you know, whether you have a fan share subscription or just have other ways of monitoring, you know, who's getting buzz this week. I would recommend keeping a pretty close eye on that. Let's move on to Jason Day, who is the second most expensive golfer on the board, and he's never won at Pebble Beach, but he's been close a ton of times, and I think that makes him pretty interesting and worthy of discussion here. This will be Day's 10th time being at Pebble Beach, and in the previous nine, he has 5 top 10s and 7 top 25s. He has been 6th or better 5 separate times. That does include each of the past 2 years. He was 5th in 2017, despite shooting a 75 on Saturday, and he finished 2nd last year. Day's coming off 5th at the Farmers Insurance Open, so the current form could be there. Brandon, are you willing to pay $11,700 to get Jason Day on your rosters, which would make it kind of hard, a little bit harder at least, to afford Dustin Johnson at $12,400?
So Day and Spieth are the two golfers who, to me, don't really have the recent stats compared to every other top-tier golfer, but who I think fit the course fantastically. And we've seen that in obviously the, you know, the past finishes here. But if you need a golfer who can scramble and make putts and really just not necessarily implode and just hang around, that's Jason Day at this course. We've seen it with the, you know, 2nd, 5th, 11th, 4th, the past 4 years. So I do think that Jason Day is very much in play. And you make a good point with Dustin Johnson, who's coming back over from Saudi Arabia. It's hard. It's hard to roster both. So I think that if people just go to DJ, Day by default is going to be a bit underowned. And yeah, I am always sort of more willing to play Jason Day than you seem to be.
Yeah, in general, that's true. I think for this specific event, because I am emphasizing distance and Day can do well in that department, and I agree with you where the stats are probably kind of sketchy for Jason Day, because if you look at the events that he has been to recently, they've generally been tougher events. And like that, I think that that's going to weigh down some of his stats. So I don't really care as much about his stats as I would someone like Tony Finau. Like if Finau had bad stats, which he doesn't because he's Tony Finau, then I'd probably care a little bit more about that. But I think with Jason Day, I don't really have to. So I think I like Day, and I think I'm willing to use him with Dustin Johnson because I really hate the mid-range this week, which is kind of the opposite of me in usual. Like generally, I'm very accepting the mid-range. There are a lot of guys I like. This week, there are two or three guys between like 9,000 and 10,000 who I don't hate, basically. So I'm very willing to plug in Dustin Johnson and Jason Day and kind of live in the 8,000s a bit. If you plug in both DJ and Day, you're left with 8,975 on average per player. I think I'm pretty okay with that, honestly. Is that a range you're okay with based on what you've seen from the value plays so far this week?
So you said what, 8,975?
Yep.
So, I mean, then it comes down to, do you want to play Dustin Johnson and Jason Day and have like 89 to 9,000 for your final four, or like a Jordan Spieth, Tony Finau, Phil Mickelson, you know, take your pick in that range. And for your final three, you have 89. That's a pretty big difference, like differentiation point in your roster construction. I think that most people would probably go more balanced than play both DJ and Jason Day. So I think that both lineup constructions are in play, but I kind of taken a long, hard look at this, you know, three stud build, and you know, you have about the same amount left for three golfers than you do with four. Although this is, you know, the 54 guaranteed holes that matters this week.
Yeah, for sure. And it is a large field too, which kind of counteracts a tiny bit the value of that extra round before the cut. But I think I'll do both builds because I like Day a lot, but I also really like the guys in the 11,000 range, like Finau. I love Finau. I love Cantlay. I think Spieth is interesting again. So like I'm going to do that. Fleetwood is 11,500, so not a ton cheaper, but I like him too. So I think that I'll kind of vary roster construction this week and then let that dictate who else I play in my roster. So it's going to be rotating through roster constructions on the top end and then letting that dictate where I go among the value plays. One guy who would fit with that build is Jimmy Walker. He is $8,900. Brandon, another guy who has done really well here in the past, and I actually think that he kind of is intriguing for me this week. What have you seen with Jimmy Walker on your end?
Yeah, so I think I'm with you. I don't really care for the mid-range. I didn't care for the mid-range last week. There are maybe, you know, between 95 and like 10-5, one or two golfers who catch my eye. So I'm living in that like low 9,000, high 8,000 range. One of the golfers there is Jimmy Walker. I almost wrote him up on my weekly primer on Number Fire because of the course history, and he sort of did enough in recent performance to sort of pop. But I mean, he's played here all 10 of the past seasons, made 9 of the 10 cuts he missed back in 2010, finished 55th twice. Other than that, he's finished 21st or better in the other 7 he won here in 2014. Over his past 50 rounds, according to Fantasy National, he ranks 46th among the field in strokes gained approach. He's 18th around the green. Hasn't really converted on the par 4s and par 5s, but you know, we've seen him do it here year after year. It's just 8,900. I think that he does enough to be in consideration, but I don't know if he's going to sort of fall into my core because I do kind of like a lot of other golfers. So I guess the bigger question is that did Jimmy Walker pop for you at all this week?
Yeah, so he has the course history, which I think is kind of the biggest appeal of Walker. And in general, I am not trustworthy of golfers whose biggest appeal is their course history. But with Walker, even though that is his biggest appeal, his stats aren't terrible. Like the three stats I'm looking at are, again, distance, approach, and scrambling. Over the past 50 rounds per Fantasy National, he's 59th in the field in distance, 45th in approach, and 14th in scrambling. I can accept that. Like, there aren't a lot of guys in his salary tier who do that, who are, you know, acceptable in all three areas. So I think Walker actually does fit pretty well for me when you look at the stats. You know, the current form is pretty mediocre, but like I'm doing, you know, you have your course primer. I have a segment with FNTSY later today, like where I go through like six golfers. Walker's one of those six for me as a value play. I think that he does make sense. So yeah, I'm going to have some Jimmy Walker. I don't think he's like a guy I'm prioritizing because like you, there are a good number of guys I like in this salary tier, but I'm really not opposed to throwing him out there for sure.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm looking specifically at the sub 9,000 range, there are at least four golfers who I think, you know, have enough to sort of, you know, price considered put above Walker, but I mean, he's close. And, you know, if you can lock in, you know, your three or four studs, if you really narrow down like who you think are the best studs this week, you can then just rotate in these cheap guys because there are enough to play a stud heavy lineup. So you have a lot of options this week. That's always the best way to experience PGA DFS is whenever you're not locked in to any particular lineup construction.
And what you mentioned there is making the studs your core and then rotating through value plays. That is what I'll be doing this week for sure, because I have a lot of conviction in the studs that I like. And there are enough value plays where I can differentiate there. So that will be my go-to this week, is pick my two or three studs, go from there, and kind of cycle through, essentially. One of the guys who could be involved in the cycle through potentially is Kevin Streelman. He's another value option at 8-3, and he comes here with a lot of solid finishes at Pebble Beach. This is the overall experience for Streelman is great. He's got 11 total events. He was 9th in 2012, but I think things overall for Streelman have really picked up recently the past 3 years at Pebble Beach. He was 17th in 2016, 14th in 2017, and then 6th in 2018. He's been over par in just one of those rounds, shot a 65 here last year, so he can go low. But Streelman's also got a lot of missed cuts in his current form. He has missed 4 of the past 8 cuts since last year's FedEx Cup playoffs. He has just one top 25 finish in that time, and I believe it was exactly 25th. So, Brandon, the salary is very low at $8,300. Is that enough to overcome the kind of checkered current form that Kevin Streelman brings?
Yeah, I think so. He's made 2 of his past 3 cuts, and the one that he missed was at Torrey Pines, which is about roughly, you know, three times as long as the courses he'll be playing this week. He sits 19th in strokes gained approach and in proximity over his past 50 rounds. I think that he just sets up well, and I think that he's very much in play given that $8,300 price tag. I'm not overly concerned about Kevin Stroman this week.
Yeah, I'm not like jumping out of my way to use him, but I think if I go with that Day Johnson build, he does make a lot of sense there because he is so far below that average at $8,300 that he does allow me to get into that mid 9,000 range. Maybe get the guys I do like there, specifically Sung J.M. I think that like I would be very happy to get him in there, and a guy like Stroman would allow me to do so. So I think there'll be lines where I use Stroman. He's not the only guy in this mid to low 8,000 range who I like. So, like, I have other options there, but I think that Stroman will be at least be on that list because, again, like you mentioned, the approach game is there. He has the good course history, and the current form is not as bad as it could be, I guess is the way I put it, with Kevin Streelman. Let's focus now on some guys who have really good current form. This is generally where we tend to lean overall as opposed to course history. And let's start here with Matt Kuchar. Brandon mentioned him before because he is $600 more expensive than Jordan Spieth. But Kuchar coming off of a fourth place finish and got a win not too long ago. Golfing pretty well. So what do you see with Matt Kuchar at $11,400?
Yeah, Kuchar, he's not someone I play a lot in loaded fields, but at a certain point, I think I have to be more and more open to it. He's just another enticing top-tier option this week. Doesn't really stand out with the course history, which obviously doesn't matter for this section. A long, long ago, he was 14th here in 2009. He finished sixth at the 2010 U.S. Open. But then since then, just a missed cut in 2017, finished 62nd here last year. But we're talking about that recent form, and he has two recent wins out of his past five, won the Mayakoba and the Sony, 23rd at the Australian Open, 19th at the Tournament of Champions, obviously a short field there, but fourth last week at the Waste Management. Kuchar, kind of one of the golfers who consistently grades out well enough pretty much everywhere, not ever where we can rule him out. And then you factor in this sort of heater he's on. Mm-hmm. I think that he's very much playable at $11,400. Does he do enough for you this week?
Yeah, so I think, as I mentioned before, golfers can do well here without distance because like guys like Chez have done well. You had Ted Potter Jr. win last year. You can do well without distance, but when Kuchar is $11,400 and there are guys like Finau, Fleetwood, Cantlay, Jason Day, kind of all in the same proximity from a salary perspective, and I see that Kuchar is 141st in distance over the past 50 rounds per Fantasy National, I'm willing to cross him off and look elsewhere. Like, I'm not saying he's a bad play because, again, he makes up for it so well with his approach play, with his ability to scramble. He makes up for it for sure. But if I could go with those other guys instead and kind of make it a little bit easier on myself and not go with him, I think that I'm willing to do that. So Kuchar's not a bad play. I don't think that that's true at all. But I think for me personally, based on what the data I look at says about this course, I do want to put a heavier emphasis on golfers who are long off the tee, even though you may not necessarily need to here. So I think for me, probably not going to use Kuchar, but it's more so because of his salary than what he actually does as a golfer.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Sort of, from a top-down perspective, but the way that I'm looking at it as well, sort of on the flip side is, people will pay up for Dustin Johnson, and I'm not putting Matt Kuchar on Dustin Johnson's level.
Right.
People might, if they can't get up to DJ, but they have, 12,100, they might just play Jason Day. I like Fleetwood this week, but then, so you sort of have like a loaded top and then loaded bottom, and I think that could leave Kuchar sort of overlooked as usual because, frankly, who wants to play Matt Kuchar in his, Skechers, like, any number of these guys up here at the top. So I think that he could go overlooked. And again, all things considered, I'm probably going to let ownership or expected ownership drive a lot of my decisions because I could make the case, frankly, for everyone from Jordan Spieth up this week.
Yep. And I think that that does, again, allow you to kind of – it both allows you to have options, but it also allows you to not use golfers who don't fit what you're looking for. And I think that that's where I do wind up going with Kuchar for this week. Someone who could potentially fit that same explanation is Ches Reavy. But he is $10,500, which is $900 cheaper than Kuchar, I think does change the discussion. So Reavy, not super long off the tee, but – you know, the play recently should at least get your attention. He finished fourth last week. He tied with Kuchar, actually, at the Waste Management. That was his second top five finish in his past three events. He was third at the Sony Open. Reavy has made now 9 straight cuts. He has finished 43rd or better in all of those events. But Brandon, he is, you know, he's $10,500 in a pretty tough field. Are you still riding with Ches, or does the course push you off here?
I mean, he was second here last year, I think.
Missed the cut in 2017. So it's not like he's like this consistent course horse.
No, not by any means. But I mean, so I guess 26 before that, missed cut before that. But I mean,
so
frankly,
it's due, Brandon. It's every other year.
To miss the cut, yeah. That's it's clearly a pattern. Yeah. But yeah, Reavy, you know, I'm trying to like work on waiting in more long-term form and short-term form rather than just like a sort of an arbitrary number of like 50 rounds. And thankfully Fantasy National makes that very, very easy to do. But, you know, just the weights that I sort of applied, I mean, Reavy's a top five golfer for me this week, even, you know, not even adjusting for price. So $10,500 is a very fair price for Reavy. The problem I think is that a lot of people also see that he's already kind of out in the forefront, in terms of tags on Fanshare. I think he's underpriced. I mean, it's really hard to make the case to make Ches like an $11,000 golfer in this field, but he probably deserves to be. So I'm in on Ches until I think that he is going to be heavily owned, like 25% plus.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, to me, he kind of fits in a similar bucket to Kuchar, where he's not like the ideal course fit, but I think that he can always, because like last week I was emphasizing distance too, and Ches still finished fourth. So like, it doesn't really, he's kind of one of those guys where it doesn't matter as much to me. Like, I'm not going to cross him off because of his distance. But I think, with the way I'm likely to build my rosters this week, I don't know how often I will wind up on Ches because he's $300 less than Spieth. I want to make sure I get Spieth in there. I prefer Finau. I prefer Cantlay. They're all within the same pricing tier. So I'm probably not going to use Ches. But I think like if I somehow wound up with exactly 10-5, I'm not going to say no to Ches. I just don't think that'll happen very often if I'm being realistic about it. So
yeah, I mean, with Reavy, like his approach is so good that he doesn't have to be long off the tee, although he's sort of, you know, good enough off the tee for it not to be like a net negative, and that's kind of all that matters at a course like this. So I see the case for Reavy. I'm not in love with him, but you know, I will play him if, like you, I sort of have that 10-5. I have no problems just plugging in Ches.
So let's move on here to Taylor Gooch, because he is a player we discussed recently, Brandon. We talked about him heading into last week, and both decided that like he was probably going to be a little bit too popular coming off a couple of top fives. He did wind up missing the cut, and a missed cut is very much within his range of outcomes. But the stats for Gooch are kind of interesting. So what do you see with Taylor Gooch for this week?
Yeah, I mean, his current form's spotty. He's missed 3 of his past 5 cuts. 2 of his 4 cuts in 2019 he missed at the Sony, and last week at the Waste Management, as you mentioned. But his other 2 finishes this calendar year, 4th at the Desert Classic, 3rd at the Farmers, which again, at Torrey Pines, a very long course. These Pebble Beach formats, not long by any means, but we have 95 rounds of stats on Taylor Gooch according to Fantasy National. He's 37th in strokes gained approach among the fields compared to the rest of this field's past 100 rounds, and again, he almost qualifies for that. So that's a pretty nice number, sitting 37th there given his salary of $8,800. You know, he's not he's not reliant on length. He is 63rd in around the green play, you know, again, scrambling and around the green play. Both make our list this week. I think that Gooch could sort of be a bounce back option at 8,800. The thing with these, you know, non-elite golfers, pretty much any golfer below, you know, 10K on FanDuel generally is below 10K for a reason. And it's because they either can only putt or they can't putt. Gooch still really can't putt consistently, but is a good ball striker. So he needs to, you know, bring the putter and the ball striking. I mean, I don't want to bring up his name, but Joaquin Niemann finally had a good putting performance. Did not gain strokes.
Didn't matter.
Just, you know, these golfers have to have, you know, both things go well for them to pay off. But we've seen him do that recently. So I'm in on Gooch at 8,800. I won't be significantly overweight, but I think people will probably bail on him. So any stabs on the upside from Taylor Gooch this week for you?
So I've grown to really like the strategy of targeting golfers coming off missed cuts if I believe it will lower their ownership below where it should be. Like Tony Finau this week, like, is coming off missed cuts, but he still lines up really well for this course. He's been to this course before. We know the current form before that was really good. I like taking stabs at guys like that. So I think in general, I like the strategy. And Gooch is not necessarily a person I'm crossing off. But I think the one problem I have is that there is a golfer who is similar to him, but who is better in a lot of arenas, who is almost the same price. It's Corey Connors at $8,500. Better approach play, longer off the tee, which is something, again, I'm emphasizing while you're not. His scrambling has been a tiny bit better, though it's not a strength for either guy. And Connors also missed a cut in his most recent event on the PGA Tour, but has a top five finish recently, too. So I think if I'm going with that archetype of golfer, I'd rather go Connors over Gooch. So I might wind up having Gooch, but he's also the same price as Jason Kokrak, who I adore this week. So he's definitely not a guy I'll prioritize, is I guess what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I think that Gooch, you know, you compare Connors to Gooch. I think that Gooch is the better play from a scrambling and around the green sort of safety standpoint. Mm-hmm. For pure upside, that's obviously Corey Connors, because he can gain so many strokes off the tee. Again, that's kind of our key differentiation point. But
right.
I mean, these greens are tiny, so he's got to stick it close. Cause we know that Corey Connors just can't putt.
Hey man, Canadian though, so it all makes up for it. So we're good. Let's finish up the current form of discussion here with Michael Thompson, one of the guys who came back from the web.com tour this year. Got off to a pretty hot start with a 17th at the Safeway Open, and that seems to have carried over into the 2019 calendar year. He kicked things off, he was all right. He was 69th at the Sony Open, but he followed that up by finishing 9th at the Desert Classic, and then he was 13th at the Farmers Insurance Open. And the stats for Thompson aren't great. He did miss a cut here in 2015, 2016, and 2017 after a 19th place finish in 2014. That does mean that he has course knowledge, though. So, Brandon, a couple of good finishes here for Michael Thompson recently. Is he on your list as a value play at $8,500?
No.
Is it the approach play that really?
It's like everything. I mean, I could, any golfer can do anything like for one event, and we've seen him be pretty solid, but he's kind of, to me, just always too much of a putter. If you sort of scale back his performance over a much larger sample, he's one of the worst approach players in the field. I don't particularly see it with him, and that's just coming from someone who probably earmarked about 6 golfers in like the 8,000 range. So he just is not on my list. I'm not saying he's a bad play by any means. I just don't particularly see it.
I'm a little bit more into him than you are, but I also think that he grades out lower than the other 8,000 golfers. Not 8,000 golfers, golfers with a salary. That'd be a pretty
I'd rank him last at an 8,000
random. Yeah, you know, probably not going to do that one. I would not fully exclude him from my consideration. But I think that there are other golfers who I like a little bit more in the 8,000 range. We talked about Kevin Streelman. I think I'd prefer Streelman over Michael Thompson for sure.
Connors?
We'll talk Great. About, you know, Corey Connors. Kokrak, I love. You talked about Gooch. I think I'd favor Gooch over Thompson too. But, you know, if I wind up there, I'm not opposed. I think that, I guess that's what I'm saying. But, you know, not another guy I'm not actively seeking out. Let's talk here about what the bookmakers are saying about this event for the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Two golfers right now, kind of runaway favorites, according to Betfair. The first is Dustin Johnson. He is 11-2 or 5.5-1, depending on your preference there. Pretty commanding lead there. Then it is Jason Day at 9-1. Then you got a pretty big gap. All the way back to Jordan Spieth, he is third at 20-1, before a slight drop down to Matt Kuchar, Tony Finau, and Patrick Cantlay, who are all 22-1. Tommy Fleetwood and Phil Mickelson are 25-1. And then Chez Reavie and Adam Scott round out the top group at 28-1. Brandon, when you look at this top tier, does it push you further towards building lineups with DJ and Day, or because there are so many golfers who are around 20-1, does it make you more inclined to try to get three of them?
I think I'm just going to sort of use both strategies. I'm probably leaning more toward the three stud lineup. And by stud, I mean not Dustin Johnson and Jason Day. I definitely would straight up rank Dustin Johnson by far number one. Like, that's not, shouldn't be a stretch, and the betting odds back that up. I guess sort of one of the red flags or potential red flags is that he's traveling back from Saudi Arabia. I mean, he's coming off a win, but if we're talking like cash games and just safety, I have absolutely no problems with Dustin Johnson. If we're talking tournaments and, you know, trying to get that, what is it, 30-point bonus now for a win on FanDuel that they changed the finishing positions, I could see the merit to sort of being underweight or even full fading him. If he wins, I'll just sort of chalk it up to, you know, having it be a little bit unfortunate. But
yeah,
I think that Dustin Johnson is the best cash game play that you could really ever get from a week-to-week standpoint. But I think that could leave Jason Day maybe a little bit under-owned because he's $700 cheaper than Dustin Johnson, who's such a heavy favorite. So I don't know. What are your thoughts between like the DJ Day lineup versus the sort of like a Spieth, Finau, Cantlay setup?
So first of all, with the scoring, it is 30 points to first on FanDuel now and 20 points to second. So it's a 10-point drop, which is significant for sure. So I think that is something definitely to weigh in here. And you want guys who can win. And I think that with these win odds, like, and with the stats that Dustin Johnson brings, like, they're stupid how good he is. I want to get Dustin Johnson in well over half my lineups. Like, I know that. Like, he's a 60 to 80%er for me because I'm so in love with everything that he does. I know the travel's a concern, but like, he's a former winner here. His recent form at this event is good. His current form, obviously, in general is great. So I'm going to have a lot of Dustin Johnson. And I think that that kind of pushes me towards pairing him with Day pretty often. But I'm also not opposed to, like, you know, in the lineups where I don't have DJ, still putting Day in there and pairing him with two other studs. So I think for me, it's just mixing roster construction this week and then seeing where that leads me. So I'm going to have Dustin Johnson with Jason Day, but I'll also have Dustin Johnson with Jordan Spieth and then a player to be named later. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can, like, it's not like you have to do either or either. Like, you can do DJ Spieth Chez, and then you have like almost 8,800 for your final three. So it's not
Which
that
I can
much
live
different
for sure in this specific field.
So, I mean, it's not like you have to play DJ and Day together or like three other guys. That's not the case. So a lot of different options. And if you're like in on Chez Reavie, I know that, spoiler, we're both in on Adam Scott, who's only 10,000. Like, you don't have to, you know, struggle if you play Dustin Johnson.
Right. You can do, like, for Adam Scott, you can do Dustin Johnson, Patrick Cantlay, Adam Scott. And like, that's a really fun lineup for me. And I'm going to have that lineup. Like, that's a really fun lineup. So I don't think Dustin Johnson is prohibitively expensive, and I'm going to have a lot of him, and I'm willing to pair him with pretty much anyone else, regardless of what their salary may be, just because the value plays here, I think, are really, really attractive for this week. Let's take a look at some of those lower salary golfers, Brandon, who do have odds that stand out. Again, these via Betfair. Who are some guys we could potentially turn to if we do decide to go a little bit top heavy here?
So if we look at, you know, I generally make the cutoff 9,500 on FanDuel. That leaves Sung J M, who's 9,300. He is 45-1 to win, according to Betfair. He is certainly on my list. I can almost guarantee he's on Jim's list as well. Cameron Champ and Kevin Kisner come in at 50-1. I'm not really on either this week. Russell Knox is 9,200. He's 55-1. He's on my list. Jason Kokrak, 60-1 at 8,800. I like him this week. Russell Henley and Scott Piercy sort of, for me, highlight a pretty lengthy list of golfers who are 80-1 to win. So again, Henley, Piercy, 80-1, but also at 80-1, Chesson Hadley, Charlie Hoffman, Graham McDowell. Got that Lynx narrative this week. And Siwoo Kim, Jimmy Walker, the aforementioned Jimmy Walker, is 90-1. And then if we look more down the list, we have Taylor Gooch, Corey Connors, Nick Watney, and Doug Gim at 100-1. I would be fine with Gooch, Connors, and even potentially Gim, but no Nick Watney for me.
Yeah, I think that a lot of those guys in that list are pretty intriguing to me, but it also does illustrate that this week, the mid-range is just less attractive than usual. It's not just because of the odds. I think from a stats perspective, too, a lot of the guys in the mid-range just don't really do a lot for me. You mentioned Sung J-M, and Sung J-M is not in my player picks, but that's because he's been in my player picks literally every other week this yeah. year. And I was like, no, I can't do this again. So I love Sung J-M, and I'm going to use him a lot. I just, you know, I had to use restraint and not use him in my player picks again. So Sung J-M.
It's like the LeBron MVP fatigue. It's
yes,
the same exact
exactly.
thing as Sung J-M. I mean, they're basically.
Yeah, Lucas Glover is Steve Nash. That's exactly what it is.
I don't get it, but I'm not going to question it.
Steve Nash won an MVP because was that LeBron? I don't know. I don't know basketball. Don't listen to me ever.
I think he won two. I mean, I'm a basketball guy, but like the MVP stuff kind of bored
MVP
me.
And Hall of Fame debates make my head hurt. And yeah. I accidentally entered that Twitter discussion. Idiot. So never. My social media team has been fired, basically. So you mentioned you don't like Cam Champ. I'm not actively into him, but I think if I'm emphasizing distance more than others, it could make sense for me based around that to use Champ. Like, I'm not going to use him a lot because the approach play is poo. But, like, he's super long off the tee, and I think that that is, like, something I'm favoring more than others. The problem is, like, again, he's the same price as Sung J-M, essentially. So, you know, I'm probably not going to go there very often, but at least under that line of thought, he would, in theory, make sense for me. Let's talk about weather for this weekend because it could be interesting. Rain is going to roll in around 10 a.m. Friday morning, as of right now, according to Dark Sky Weather. Around 10 a.m. Friday morning and stick around for the rest of the day, wind speeds will get above 10 miles per hour around the same time and also stay elevated. The weather seems to get worse as the day goes along on Friday. Saturday, the rain looks like it should go away in the morning, but it also looks like there's a chance it could linger still. The wind speeds, though, once again, get above 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. On Sunday, we won't have to worry about the waves, but it will potentially be raining, and the winds are projected to be about 15 miles per hour. So overall, pretty bad weather weekend outside of Thursday. So this is a long ways out. I would make sure you check back on the weather again Wednesday night. But it does seem like weather will have a legit impact on this weekend. Brandon, because golfers are on different courses and weather may affect one course more than it does the other, I think there is actually some pretty legit reasoning to potentially go with waves this week. You know, use golfers who start out at Spyglass and, like, you know, use golfers who start off at Pebble Beach and weigh them more heavily in one lineup and kind of go based on that. I don't use that very often, but I think I'm willing to do that for this weekend. What about for you?
Yeah, I think that maybe that's something that I'll have to look into because, again, I just generally ignore weather because yeah. I've been very, very bad at predicting it in the past. But this week with a three course setup, with weather being such a thing, and with wind being like a driving factor here, it makes sense to play waves. Another thing, and again, I'm not factoring in driving distance, but if it's going to be wet, and if the fairways remain easy to hit, if they haven't been altered too much, you can definitely elevate the longer hitters because you can just launch it and not really have to worry about placement as much, and you won't have to worry as much about launching it and having it roll left or right into the rough. So you could kind of elevate the bigger hitters this week, but I don't think I'll do that unless I just sort of build like a big hitter lineup.
So what you're saying is 100% Cameron Champ.
Yes. Luke List. He's not here, but
he can still win.
Yes.
He can't miss a cut this week. That's a plus.
That sure is. Maybe he'll make a putt at his practice green or something. But
well, his strokes gained putting will be much better this week than it usually is. So I would keep an eye on when tee times come out this week. And
yeah, I've been looking, but I can't find anything.
They don't usually come out until after we record, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that they generally put like the class at Pebble Beach on Saturday.
Okay.
So that it has like the national coverage. So keep that in mind. But obviously just kinda you can use weather, you can sort of use the wave approach this week.
Okay, so keep an eye on that and make sure you check back on the weather on Wednesday night as well. With that said, let's take a look at our player picks for the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Brandon, starting off in the high salary range, who are you looking at up there?
I'm going to go with Jason Day. Again, I have no problems with really any of the top like 10 golfers in terms of salary, and I'm fine with Chez and Adam Scott as well. So it's really hard. It's been really, really hard for me to differentiate. But I do like Jason Day, even at his price at $11,700. He is the only golfer with the win odds that are even like in Dustin Johnson's stratosphere this week. His recent stats don't really put him on par with the rest of the top of the field. But that's always kind of something with Day that you can rule out. Because he just sort of does what he does, and that is make pars and scramble and putt very well. He's also finished well here. He's got a fourth, an 11th, a fifth, and a second over his past four tries. We know that he can win. He sits top 10 in strokes gained on par fours and par fives and around the green play over the past 50 rounds, according to Fantasy National. He's just 77th in approach in that sample, but I mean, he can clearly excel in this. Like, this is an odd format. You're playing with the amateurs. It's very slow. You're playing long, long rounds. So I think that this is a Jason Day week, and I'm not overly concerned about it. So I feel confident putting him as one of my high-priced player picks.
Do you factor in the fact that they have been here before more because it's so weird? Like, well, Matt Ryan and Aaron Rodgers are spraying it, and Toby Keith are, putting balls all over the place and slowing things down. Does that make you put a little bit more emphasis on golfers who have dealt with, Matt Ryan being erratic before?
Yeah, I think that there's something to that. And like, I love Tommy Fleetwood as a golfer. I'm not alone in that. I love him this week, but I mean, he hasn't played here before. This is like, and it's not just, he hasn't seen this course before. It's like, he hasn't really played these like long maddening rounds where it's just very distracting, and that's enough for me to sort of put Fleetwood down the list. But sure, again, I'm fine playing Tommy Fleetwood. Like, I have no issues, but all things considered, if I'm comparing him to Jason Day, who's been here and done so well, I think I just give the nod to Jason Day.
One guy who has not struggled with that format is Dustin Johnson. We talked before about what we're doing with him, and I'm personally going to be around between 60 and 80% because I think his stats are just too good to pass up. Looking at the past 50 rounds, Johnson ranks fourth in distance, first in approach, and sixth in scrambling, according to Fantasy National. Just stupid across the board. And that's on top of solid history at Pebble Beach. He is a two-time winner here. He has a pair of runner-ups. He has been third and second the past 2 years, so obviously he's been a stud recently. He was in Saudi Arabia last week, as Brandon mentioned, but he won there. And I'm happy to use him at $12,400. Brandon, you mentioned cash games, kind of like a no-brainer, like a safe play. For tournaments, how heavy can you go on Day when you, or sorry, on Johnson, when you consider the salary, when you consider the ownership, when you consider the travel, how heavy can you go at him?
I can very much say underweight relative to the field, because I, even with all these options, I think that Dustin Johnson will be the most popular golfer. I could be wrong in that, but
yeah,
with he's so good, he's so consistent, I think that people will just find ways to pay up for him as they usually do. So I still think that the right play in tournaments is to be underweight. And if I am playing Dustin Johnson, that is a lineup where I will either try to leave some extra salary on the table or play some of my lower owned picks.
Yeah,
some of the less safe, less obvious options. So, I mean, for example, if we get the vibe that Chez Reavie is going to be very popular, I will not really play Dustin Johnson with Chez, and I will force myself to play somebody other than the more popular picks with him.
And I think that that's kind of what makes me like the DJ Day lineup, because I think that that one will be harder to do. And I think there are enough value plays for me to be okay with it. So I'm hoping that will help differentiate a tiny bit. We'll see how things shake out as we get to Thursday. Who's your second high-priced golfer, Brandon?
This is a name we've barely mentioned, but Tony Finau.
Let's go.
$11,200. He's 22-1 to win. And, of course, he's a target whenever we need distance. But he's a very good golfer in other, you know, areas as well. He missed last week's cut by losing strokes on his approach shots, which is a little bit problematic to me, but that's a boatload on the greens, and that was the bigger issue. He finished 23rd here in 2017. I think that he's shaping up, and Tony Finau is always sort of more popular than he should be, I think, but this is a hard week to sort of predict him. Mm-hmm. Being priced where he is, sandwiched between all these other great golfers, for him to be just super popular coming off a missed cut. So I think that he could be a bit of a low-owned pivot, and if that's the case, you know, when you play that long hitter lineup, you could pair him with Dustin Johnson and sort of play that angle. These are the kinds of things that I'm going to be considering whenever I'm rostering DJ this week. So, you know, there are a lot of golfers around his price who sort of like seem to fit the course better than he would. But mm-hmm. I mean, Finau's done well on coastal courses, according to the strokes gained data on futurefantasy.com. So I like Finau quite a bit, and I'm going to have a good bit of Finau this week.
So I'm going to talk about Patrick Cantlay here. Then I'm going to talk about this tier more broadly. So think about Kuchar, Finau, Cantlay, Fleetwood, and Mickelson. We can put Paul Casey in there too, but I think he'll probably rate out a little bit lower. But we'll put that 11 to 11.5 range. I want to ask you your favorites in that tier. We'll do that in a second. First, I'm going to talk about Cantlay here, because he actually has a similar appeal to Finau, because he missed the cut 2 weeks ago while being pretty popular. So I'm hoping that that will force people to go elsewhere rather than gravitating back to Cantlay for the rebound. He measures up well statistically here, 22nd in the field in distance, and he is third in approach, sitting behind only Dustin Johnson and Adam Scott. Before that missed cut, Cantlay had rattled off four straight top 10s, six straight top 25s, so I personally don't really care that he missed a cut. Like, that can happen to anyone. So he's $11,000. Brandon, I think if we go from 11.5 to 11, I would rank them Cantlay, Finau, everyone else. What about for you?
Yeah, I would have Cantlay first, Finau second, then probably... So Phil is like the outlier statistically. It's always sort of going to be the case, but he has a second, a 65th, and a second here over the past 3 years. He, Day, and Spieth are the three golfers who don't really sort of stand out from a statistical standpoint as much as these other top tier golfers, but I like their course fit and I like their course history. So that's kind of a problem, but I would probably put him third, and then go with Fleetwood and Kuchar. Tough for me, but I'll give Kuchar the nod because Fleetwood hasn't played here. And then I'll put Casey last, although looking at like a long-term and short-term mix, Casey's actually third in my model.
Oh, interesting. Because I'm always more of the Paul Casey guy here.
He was eighth here last year.
Eighth year last year. He was 16th at, was it the Sony? I don't know. Wherever he was. He missed the cut, the event after that. But like,
Oh, sorry, I spaced out. He was 16th at the tournament champions, I think.
Oh, okay.
Missed the cut at the Sony.
Yeah.
Second some, I think he was a second somewhere. Okay. Overseas.
I don't know. I think I'd prefer Finau and Cantlay and just kind of like them more. I think I'd put Fleetwood third, personally, despite the fact that he hasn't been to this event. I still think I'd put him third over Kuchar, over Mickelson, and over Paul Casey. Let's move now to the mid-range. And again, we're not as enthused this mid-range as we generally are, but Brandon, who are the guys you would go to if you do wind up in this range?
Russell Henley, and I do kind of like him a little bit more than just like if I have to.
Sure.
At 9,500. He's 80-1 to win according to Betfair. He's finished 15th here last year. He was 15th at the Waste Management Open. He finished 16th in strokes gained approach at the Waste Management Open, which I like to see. Finished 16th at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach in 2010. So there's that angle in Henley's favor. He ranks 25th in strokes gained on par fours over his past 50 rounds, 17th in proximity. You know, if you're, again, I'm trying to weigh in more that long-term and short-term form. I think that he does enough to click for me at 9,500. So in this barren mid-range, I think Henley stands out for me.
Russell Knox and Russell Henley are like clones, right? So like Russell Knox and Russell Henley, both not super long, good approach games, decent in scrambling, both finished 15th here last year, both missed the cut in 2016, and both have like pretty decent current form. Are they the same person? Are we sure they're not?
We can't be certain about anything.
Okay. Life is meaningless, eat Arby's. Let's talk about Adam Scott here, a guy we both like.
All right. Who's that? Andrew Whitworth?
Yeah. He said, we're all going to die eventually. So Andrew Whitworth, summing up my thoughts of Super Bowl 53. Adam Scott, I think the salary is kind of too low at $10,000. He is 29th in this field in distance the past 50 rounds. But he's second in approach. He missed the cut at the Sony Open following a long layoff, and I kind of think that's why he missed the cut, but came back, finished second at the Farmers. He has three top fives in his past nine events, and the one downside here is that Scott missed the cut last year in his only trip since 2010 to Pebble Beach, but he shot a 70-70 on Friday and Saturday, so I think it's just kind of a rough first day for him, maybe adjusting to the format. So I think Scott can make it work this time around. I'm not overly concerned about that miscut. $10,000, he is kind of the one mid-tier guy outside of Sung J.M., who is a very different price, that I think I'd prioritize. What about for you with Adam Scott, Brandon?
Yeah, pretty much everything you just said is the reason I like Scott. I think he's underpriced, but I like that he's priced where he is because it helps me play him.
Helps a lot.
He pops, you know, from a strokes gained on coastal courses standpoint. Again, all that credit goes to futurefantasy.com, a great site for looking into sort of splits on things that are hard to get access to in other places. So Scott, for me, definitely on the list at 10,000.
All right, so let's talk about the clone, Brandon. Russell Knox, $9,200. And again, I don't know why he chose to talk with the same guy for both. Hey,
that way I didn't have to do as much work. I just
exactly. Everything.
But yeah, Knox has made four straight cuts in 2019, 43rd, 18th, 43rd, and 10th. He sits 10th in proximity over his past 50 rounds. He's 26th in strokes gained approach in that sample. He's really got like a solid combo of win odds and pricing. He's 55-1 according to Betfair. He finished 15th here last year, of course, which we know because I already said that for Russell Henley. I think that he's just in the mix. He sort of grades out well on coastal courses as well. So Knox and Henley, as well as Sung J.M., three options in that low 9,000 range who I will be using this week.
I think Knox is like probably third on my list in the 9,000 range, I would say. Like, I think that he does make a lot of sense. So I like Knox. I'm very okay with him. I prefer that Russell over other Russell. Knox over Henley. What about for you between those two?
I kind of do give the nod to the Scottish Knox. So I'll go, or the Scottish Russell, I guess.
Okay.
So I'll go with Knox.
All right, cool. Let's talk about Lucas Glover, a guy we have not discussed yet. And again, Sung J.M. was... he's been here too often, like in this section. So, like, you like Sung J.M., correct?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
The red flag with him is that he's played so many weeks in a row.
Right.
But I mean, he doesn't have to drive, his parents drive him around, so he can just focus on golf. So yeah, that's like a plus, but
yeah, so we're good. Sung Jm, he's a good play. He's just, we've talked about him way too much. So Sung Jm at $9,300, totally cool. Lucas Glover, I think the stats are decent across the board. He's 46th in distance, 58th in approach, and 18th in scrambling. Now, he's one of those golfers, kind of like we talked about with Finau and Cantlay, where he missed the cut in his most recent event. But before that, Glover was 12th at the Desert Classic. He had six straight top 17 finishes entering last week. His last crack at Pebble Beach was 2016, and he did finish 11th there. So I'm all right with him at 96, and I think the missed cut last week where he was more popular than I expected him to be, I think that's going to keep people away. So I think I mentioned that Knox is my third favorite guy in this range. It goes Sung Jm, Lucas Glover, Russell Knox. Is Glover on your list at all, Brandon?
He's not on my list, but I don't really have any reason for that other than the fact that I'm probably just not going to be in this range that sure. much. And if I am, I'm just going to sort of roll it on Henley or spend down or spend up. So
okay,
I really don't have anything against Glover. He grades out well for me, but I think he's just kind of, I can only play so many golfers, and yeah, I think that he just missed the cut for me.
All right, let's move down to the lower salary tier. Brandon, guys below $9,000, who is catching your eye down there?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about a lot of these guys already, and I've talked about this one in particular, but I like Taylor Gooch at 8,800. I think that he's just a solid play sort of all around. He's 20th in approach and on par 5 strokes gained over his past 50 rounds. And I mean, if you just dig back into like his full sample on tour, which again, 95 rounds, he looks good. There's still the problem with the putter. It's not a guarantee that he comes through each and every week with that. But I guess he did miss the cut last year at Pebble, last week at the Waste Management, but that should drop his ownership. And I think the price is right for what he can do over a guaranteed 54 holes. So I'm in on Gooch again. I don't have too many concerns, I guess.
He is the same salary as Jason Kokrak, which I think is the big thing that's a negative for Gooch for me. So let's talk about Kokrak, because he's almost in the Sung Jm territory where I've talked about him far too much. But I think we got one more week with Kokrak, and then I'll just say that he's implied. But Kokrak has now cranked out three straight top 25 finishes to start the calendar year. He was 18th at the Desert Classic. He was 20th at the Farmers, 20th at the Waste Management. And once again, he does line up well with what I want statistically. He is 26th in the field in distance and 18th in approach, and he has used that to finish 35th or better here each of the past 3 years. So Kokrak, once again, going to be on a lot of my rosters at $8,000 or $8,800. Brandon, where do you sit with Jason Kokrak for Pebble Beach?
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't have Kokrak penciled in, I would have talked about him instead of Gooch, so I kind of had to stick with Gooch, even though I had already discussed him. I like Kokrak quite a bit. He's one of my go-to golfers this week yet again. I don't really have much to add on top of what you already said, so I'm just back on Kokrak.
All righty, let's move now to the little bit lower pricing range. Who stands out for you, Brandon, you want to mention here?
I'm going to go with Streelman because he popped for me, and I think that's pretty – I think it's a good sign that he's sort of on both of our lists at 8,300. 17th, 14th, 6th at Pebble Beach over the past 3 years. Made two of his past three cuts, and again, his missed cut came at Torrey Pines. He's 19th in strokes gained approach and proximity over his past 50. I think he just sets up well here. So I think he's a pretty safe play. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he can push through and make a cut.
And I think that he fits, again, really well with that build where I have Day and Johnson, or, Johnson and someone else. Like, I mean, Finau and Cantlay are both pretty expensive, too. So,
yeah. And I have Scott Stallings as a play as well.
I actually thought about him, too. Okay, I feel better. Stallings is $8,000, I believe. I'm trying to find him here.
Yeah.
$8,000, 21st in distance the past 50 rounds, 16th in approach, and 14th and 17th the past 2 years. So I didn't mention Stallings here, but I'm glad you did because I like him.
Yeah, 18th in approach over his past 50 rounds. Been top 15 the past 2 years, with the 14th and a 7th at Pebble Beach. So, I mean, he can score enough on the par fours to be in play at 8,000. So, you know, if you already are sick of hearing Kevin Streelman's name, Scott Stallings is someone we can target down here as well.
And we both agree. How about that? I think the final guy to mention here for me is Corey Connors. Pretty volatile. Could wind up biting us, but, you know, like, there's upside here. Missed the cut at the Desert Classic because he lost strokes with his approach game, but he still did gain off the tee. And this is after he gained 7.1 strokes in approach at the Sony Open. He finished second there, the strokes gained data via Fantasy National. Overall, Connors is 9th in approach in this field over the past 50 rounds. He is also 40th in distance, and he can go low. So I will take that, even with the risk it does carry. Connors is $8,500. Brandon, are you okay with him for this weekend?
Yeah, I think he's a risky play, but I think that he could definitely pay off. And, you know, if you're playing that, like, you know, everything's wet and you can launch it, he could pair well with like a DJ Finau start, something like that. So I think there's that angle to play with Connors, but he's on my list, mm-hmm. just not necessarily a core play because he's never going to be overly safe.
Can't. Right. He can't be a core play, but I think that the upside is definitely there. And I think that that does draw me here. So let's take a look at our winners for this week. Brandon, at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, we will say one golfer anybody you like, and then one, let's keep going back to 60 to 1 or longer, because I think that that takes away Sung Jae Im again. So that's the main.
Gosh.
I can't do it anymore. He's been great. I can't. I have to stop.
I mean, should we roll out DJ and Day, or?
Up to you. I would say DJ for sure. Let's rule out both. So someone else after DJ and Day, and then 60 to 1 or longer to win.
How about Patrick Cantlay?
Okay. Then I'll take Tony Finau. For me, it was between Finau and Cantlay, so I'll just go Finau.
Okay. And then 60 to 1 or longer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I hated that you asked that specific question.
So obviously the pick is Kokrak, mm-hmm. but I will leave you Jason Kokrak.
All right. What are you doing?
I'll begrudgingly take Russell Henley.
Okay, so you got Russell Henley. I will take the bait and just go Kokrak. He was exactly 60 to 1. Again, not intentional, but it was pretty intentional. So I've got Finau, Kokrak. You've got Cantlay and Henley, correct?
Yeah, and I'm assuming that I just take whichever finishes better between Russell Knox and Russell Henley.
Again, they're the same person. I think you take the worst finish, though, because... Not me. So I would like to watch this weekend to try to see if I see them in the same place at once. If not, I'm just going to assume they're the same dude. So that'd be my mission for this weekend. Brandon, interesting event for this week, because I think that for me personally, it's an event where I'm allowing my variations in roster construction to dictate where I go with my lower salary plays, but my core will be in the studs for this week, which is a little bit different than usual. What are your final thoughts on this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many options. Like I would have said Jordan Spieth to win if I were a little more confident that his floor was higher. Like, I mean, he has finished at least 22nd here in each of his past six, but like, I think that he could win. Obviously Dustin Johnson could win. Day could win. Cantlay, I think, could maybe win. Obviously, I picked them to win, but I'm picking more like a high floor play as much as anything. There, a lot of different things can happen. This is a weird format. The weather, the wind, it can really throw things off. And I mean, look, just look at the past winners here. It tells you pretty much everything you need to know. Ted Potter,
the spreadsheet murderer.
Yeah, Ted Potter Jr. With or without the period. Spieth.
And with or without the comma sometimes, too. Don't forget that one.
That's true. Snedeker, Jimmy Walker, Snedeker again, Phil, D.A.
Taylor.
Did you say Paul Taylor?
Vaughn Taylor?
Oh, yeah. I said Vaughn Taylor.
Yeah, it's just like these. This is great. So Jason Kokrak, destiny awaits, man. It's going to be great.
I, It would be, I mean, anybody can win this thing with how it's set up. So
let's go. Jason Kokrak, your 2019 AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am champion. Once again, we are here every week to talk PGA on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed. If you want to get these pods every week, in addition to our NASCAR pods starting next week and MLB podcast starting at the end of March, make sure you subscribe to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy podcast feed. That is on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app to get all these podcasts as they are posted. Brandon, if people have questions for you on Twitter, where can they find you there?
I'm at Gadula13, GDULA13.
I am at Jim Sonnes. If you want to fight me about Patriots being Hall of Famers, as with everyone else, I am at Jim Sonnes, JimSannes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Have fun filling out those lineups, and we'll talk to you again next week. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.